This program is a paid commercial announcement from Jacob Media Partners and does not reflect the views of WPHT or its management. Your radio doctor does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on your radio doctor. Always consult your own physician.
Talk Radio 1210, WPHT, WPHT HD, WOGL, HD3, Philadelphia, a Radio.com station. Live from the Malamud and Associates Law Studios, it's time for the Delaware Valley's first radio doctor. On call every Sunday morning at 10. This is your radio doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie.
I'm not declaring a public health emergency of international concern today. As it was yesterday, the emergency committee was divided over whether the outbreak of novel coronavirus represents a fake or not.
Your health determines your life, your longevity, and your happiness. Let your radio doctor lead the way with your medical education. Your radio doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie.
And on a Sunday morning, we say good morning to everybody tuning in here on Talk Radio 1210, WPHT, every Sunday morning at 10 a.m. Your radio doctor comes to the radio dial and brings you all kind of incredible information. And Dr. Marianne, as I bring you into the microphone and welcome you on this Sunday morning, I must confess, as a listener, I have learned a lot in our first 3 weeks here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Well, thank you for that welcome, Joe, and welcome back to our listeners. Another beautiful Sunday morning on your radio doctor, and I'm very honored to be your host. My name is Dr. Marianne Ritchie. Each week, we discuss a common medical disorder and then act as your voice, asking questions about causes, prevention, treatment, questions you can then take to your doctor. We've learned so much in these first few weeks on air during February, American Heart Month. We're more familiar with the signs of heart attack and what to do in those important first minutes. We know that cardiac stents can open a blockage and deliver medication to keep it open. And if it starts to scar again, we can use brachytherapy, the tiniest amount of radiation, to open it again and maybe avoid surgery. And the newest tool being studied is a drug-delivering balloon. If you need a new heart valve, sometimes the valve can be replaced using a catheter through an artery in your arm or leg without opening your chest and without opening your heart. And a failing heart can be supported with a simple mechanical device called LVAD, left ventricular assist device. Keeps your heart pumping while you wait for a heart transplant and may be in place of a heart transplant. Miraculous. And remember, if you do need surgery, stop smoking at least 4 days prior to surgery. Causes increased congestion, which leads to coughing, bumps the risk for pneumonia, and can slow healing. Today, I'm very happy to welcome two special guests. Both are stellar cardiologists at Thomas Jefferson University Hospital. With us in studio today is Dr. Reginald Ho. Dr. Ho is a professor who focuses on a very important area called EPS, electrophysiologic studies. That's a method of identifying and treating irregular heart rhythms, especially those which are life-threatening. Later, we'll be joined by Dr. David Chapon, an assistant professor and director of preventive cardiology, cardiovascular rehabilitation, and sports cardiology. In short, Dr. Chapon provides rehab after a heart attack or surgery, advises people at risk to prevent a heart attack or surgery, and then evaluates athletes to look for warning signs that put them at risk for sudden death. And lastly, stay tuned to hear about the joint program Doctors Ho and Chapon have created to screen athletes for risks before the season starts and provide coaches with a plan of action if an athlete passes out.
Really good stuff, Dr. Marianne, and a great lineup of information we have on deck for everybody tuning in on this Sunday morning for your radio doctor as we come to you on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. Don't forget you can communicate directly to Dr. Marianne by dropping her an email at doctor@yourradiodoctor.com. We'll get to our first commercial break here on a Sunday morning and meet our in-studio guest when we come back.
Thanks for listening to Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie. If you have a question for the medical mailbag, just send a note to doctor@yourradiodoctor.com.
Join the Blue Lights Campaign during March, Colon Cancer Awareness Month. Each year in March, the Blue Lights Campaign lights the Philadelphia skyline in blue for colon cancer awareness. Colon cancer is the second leading cause of cancer deaths in men and women in the U.S., but it's treatable and beatable. Early detection saves lives. Get screened. Show your support for friends affected by colon cancer. Light up your home or office in blue. Learn how you can help spread the word. Screening saves lives. Visit BlueLightsCampaign.com.
And back here on your radio doctor here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. Let me get right to Dr. Marianne after that music intro. Oh. Well done. Doc, it's all yours.
Welcome back. I hope that gets you charged up because you're going to hear a beautiful story about our guest, Dr. Reginald Ho. I'm your host, Dr. Marianne Ritchie. Dr. Ho, professor and cardiologist at Jefferson. Listeners, I'm going to share a story that explains so much about Dr. Reggie Ho. It's 1988. University of Notre Dame, ranked number 13, faces rival University of Michigan. The Wolverines are number 7. First game of the football season with less than 5 minutes to play. The score is Michigan 17, Notre Dame 16. The clock down to a minute. Fans are on their feet. Instead of a Hail Mary pass, they're collectively saying the Hail Mary. Up comes walk-on place kicker, standing 5 feet 5 inches tall, Reggie Ho. He had already won the hearts of the capacity crowd with a pair of field goals in the first half. Now, Reggie has to shut down the thunderous cheering and bring his high school soccer and football skills to make it happen. Armed with focus, precision, and courage, he scores. Notre Dame wins the opening game of their undefeated season and become the national champions of 1988. And that game would forever be known as the Reggie Ho game. My friends, this is a man of focus, precision, and courage. And he scores big points every time he finds a dangerous heart rhythm and kicks it right out of the stadium. Now that's what I call a conversion. Dr. Ho?
Thank you. Thank you very much for that very kind introduction.
Well, palpitations, that's a common symptom that brings patients to their primary care doc or their cardiologist. So maybe you can take us through the process that follows that initial complaint.
Sure. So when people complain of racing of the heart or skip beats, they often come for evaluation. And some of the first things that we do is we get a good history and exam, and of course get an EKG to see whether or not there's any abnormalities on the electrocardiogram. And after initial evaluation, we look for structural heart disease. So we'll look and often order an echocardiogram, see if there's any problems of valvular problems or pump function problems. And often, if we can identify the problem right away because the abnormality is not on the EKG, we'll get a monitor, a cardiac monitor, to correlate their symptoms with their underlying rhythm.
And so sometimes an arrhythmia or an abnormal heart rhythm is benign, friendly, but sometimes it's life-threatening. What might a patient describe when they say, I'm feeling fluttering, or what's a common presentation in their own words?
Sure. Some of the common presentations would be feeling very rapid racing of the heart, for example. If they get lightheaded or they pass out, that's obviously very, very concerning. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it could just be a skip beat. And there are different reasons for having palpitations. It could just be an extra beat to something as malignant as a very fast, lethal heart rhythm. Mm-hmm. And so we have to sort out which one they have and appropriately remedy the situation.
And some of the causes might include, as you mentioned, heart disease itself. Any other typical causes people should be aware of?
So so people can have heart rhythm disorders without having any heart disease, or they could have heart disease like a prior heart attack or having heart failure, for example. Often young people who have rapid palpitations are sometimes diagnosed erroneously as having a panic disorder when they do have a true organic fast heart rhythm. And so they often have a fast heart rhythm in the upper chamber of the heart. Mm-hmm. And the older people who have, say, had a heart attack or had bypass surgery, if they have passing out episodes, we get concerned about fast heart rhythms coming from the lower chamber of the heart. That could be very, very dangerous and need to be treated.
And then sometimes that person might have a hyperactive thyroid that's their motor and it makes their heart beat more rapidly. Not always necessarily a problem, but they feel it, and it makes them feel anxious, even though they didn't start out that way. And how about certain medications, side effects?
Absolutely, yes. So there are secondary causes. So as opposed to having a primary heart rhythm problem, people can have secondary causes for fast heart rhythms or fast heartbeats. So as you had mentioned, hyperthyroidism, if there's too much thyroid in the body, the heart rate can race. If they are febrile, the heart rate can be fast just because of a secondary cause for
their heart rhythm. Good point.
Their,
I didn't think of that. Sure.
Heart rhythm, yeah.
And then things we can control, like our daily activities, too much caffeine, nicotine, the enes, nicotine, caffeine, xanthine, mm-hmm. which is a chemical in chocolate, but you have to probably eat a lot of that, and cocaine. People think about the dangers of illicit drugs, but that's a big one with cocaine that can set your heart.
Absolutely, yes. And these drugs can be very harmful. The deleterious effects of these drugs, not only in causing arrhythmias, but I'm sure as Dr. Savage had mentioned in prior segments, heart disease, coronary artery disease, and they can lead to very bad heart rhythms that people could die from, and very preventable way of very preventable cause of a sudden death.
Sure. And aside from a common cause such as a fever, anemia or a low blood count, if your tank isn't full, your heart has to beat more quickly to use the blood that it has to pump it around and do its work.
Absolutely, yeah. So when your hemoglobin is low and you need a certain amount of work to the heart has to put out, then it's going to consume more oxygen, and it's going to have you heartbeat's going to be faster, and that would require more oxygen consumption, and so it could beat faster just for those secondary causes.
Doc, let me ask you this one question just so I can follow along. Does a rapid heart rate, what does that cause? Does that affect your blood flow, or what does it do? If my heart's pumping fast, what's it doing to my body inside?
Yes. So if it's beating really fast, it is consuming a lot more oxygen, and it can sometimes, lower the blood pressure. If it lowers the blood pressure too much, then people are not going to have enough blood flow to the brain, and that's what causes symptoms of lightheadedness. That's what causes symptoms of, passing out, for example. So if someone passes out because of a fast heartbeat, it makes us very concerned because their blood pressure is not high enough to, be supported by the fast heart rate. Yeah.
So if you're going to study somebody, an EKG, we're all familiar with, that's just a brief exam, looking at your heartbeat, that may not capture the rhythm if it's not happening at that precise moment. So we also have to consider the duration. When that happens, the patient, you're going to ask them, does it last for seconds? Does it last for minutes, or could it last for hours?
Exactly. And so we have different type of recording devices that we can use other than an EKG to try to correlate their symptoms with their underlying rhythm. It's like a camera. So an EKG would be a snapshot camera, but we have cardiac event monitors that people can take home and wear. So it's kind of like a surveillance camera. And in situations where the rhythms are very sporadic, they come every once every, several months or so, then we can put in what we call an implantable loop monitor. So it goes underneath the skin. It's not a wearable monitor, and it stays in for 3 years. And if a patient has a symptom in that time, we'll be able to diagnose it by the loop monitor, an implantable loop monitor.
That's interesting, because we're used to thinking about the typical Holter monitor that a patient might wear for 24 hours. And if you don't capture the problem, and the loop, the continuous loop monitor, it better correlates probably the symptoms with the abnormal rhythm. And if they keep a diary of sorts, if the person feels it, or if, I guess, you get information on a...
Mm-hmm. Yep. So we can get information so the patient can activate their device, and they can then timestamp their symptom with what's on the monitor at that time. And then they have a monitor at their bedside that is the interface between me and the patient and I. And so the patient could press a button, that information gets downloaded to the monitor, and the monitor sends that information to our website, where we can then retrieve that information and find out what's on the on the monitor.
I was trying to think the word remotely, that it signals you, or it signals a data collecting device that says at 11:17 p.m. on February 15th, I had this sensation and it made me feel dizzy.
Beautiful. Exactly.
How about, do you do any other types of tests that try to capture the rhythm?
Yeah, so sometimes we're not able to identify the rhythm based on event monitors. So in some cases, we'll take patients to do an electrical study. We can do an electrophysiologic study. It's similar to a heart catheterization where we go through the growings and we have to access the blood vessels of the growing, and we take wires up to the heart and we stimulate the heart from different areas to try to provoke the rhythm, to try to trigger the rhythm. And then we are able to do different maneuvers to, you know, to establish the diagnosis of what it is.
Right. So if we divide the heart into longitude and latitude, you can trigger, or let's say you touch certain parts of the heart and see if that brings on atrial fibrillation or ventricular tachycardia. We'll talk about those a little bit later, but specifically what the abnormal rhythm is. And then you say, gee, if we're at 40 degrees latitude and 60 degrees longitude, that might be an area that you might consider ablation or...
Exactly. So with our electrical study, we actually, like you just said, we have GPS mapping systems. There are different mapping systems that allow us to identify where a catheter is in the heart. And when we do an ablation, which is a cautery to destroy the tissue responsible for the fast heart rhythm, we can pinpoint it with, you know, like a GPS system in the heart and go to the exact area where the fast heart rhythm comes from to get rid of it. And that's what we call an ablation. So it's a design to cure them of the fast heart rhythm so that they don't need to take medications or suffer from palpitations anymore.
So it's like map and zap.
Yep, map and zap, absolutely.
Now, if a person has a slow heartbeat, you're going to treat that differently than if they have a fast heartbeat.
Absolutely. So a slow heartbeat, we treat with pacemakers, pacing devices, and there are different types of models of pacemakers and different types of pacemakers. So pacemakers are there to treat slow heart rhythms. In contrast, there are defibrillators, which treat fast and slow heart rhythms. Most defibrillators have a pacemaker in it. So it treats patients who are at risk for dying from very bad fast heart rhythms. Mm-hmm. It shocks them back into good rhythm.
And just so the audience knows, sometimes your heart is beating quickly because of the triggers we said, too much caffeine or you're watching a scary movie, and that's benign. What we concern ourselves with, and as Dr. Ho mentioned, there are different chambers, upper and lower chambers. If the upper chamber is going too quickly, you're not going to get a good lub-dub that pushes your blood out. You get, and then the pumping isn't effective, so it sends out little bits of blood. And an example might be atrial fibrillation.
That's correct. So the different, as you mentioned, different heart rhythms in different chambers have different prognoses. So the one of the most common fast heart rhythms in the upper chamber is atrial fibrillation, which in itself is not life-threatening per se, but is a common cause for stroke and debilitating symptoms. On the converse, the fast heart rhythms that come from the lower chamber of the heart, ventricular tachycardia, or ventricular fibrillation, those are very lethal, and those were where defibrillators are important.
And so tachycardia, tachy means fast heartbeat, and that can get away from us and go so fast that the heart just stops.
That's correct.
But I like to bring up the point I always tell my medical students, that if your heart is fibrillating and it's not a nice, even lub-dub, but half of the heart is fibrillating or shaking, not blood, sending the blood out effectively, it can puddle and it can go fast and slow. And if your blood puddles, then that sets you up for clots that then cause
strokes. Exactly. Strokes. And when it comes from the lower chamber, cardiac arrest. And so people collapse, outside and they require CPR. And that's where the defibrillators would come in to treat that.
And what's really helpful about the newer defibrillators is that you put the paddles on the person and you're instructed.
Yes.
Because for lay people who don't know and they think, gosh, I have to do something. I don't want to look back and think I stood there and froze.
Exactly. So the automatic external defibrillators have voice prompts that help bystanders who are doing CPR to use the defibrillator correctly and resuscitate in an individual.
Beautiful, because sometimes we're not supposed to shock the rhythm.
Dr. Reggie Ho is our special guest here on a Sunday morning. This is your radio doctor as we come to you on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT as we roll into the show and take you up to the top of the hour at 11 o'clock. The Sounds of Sinatra coming up at 11 a.m. on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Today's edition of Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie can be enjoyed on radio.com as well. And you can listen to the show at your convenience. Just go to radio.com and in the search bar type in Your Radio Doctor. It's health education on demand.
Health Watch with Dr. Marianne Ritchie, heard weekly on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT, is sponsored by Jefferson Health, home of the Sidney Kimmel Medical College and the Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center. With over 25 years of experience in the field of gastroenterology, Dr. Marianne Ritchie is an associate professor at Thomas Jefferson University Hospital, a noted teacher, author, and speaker in women's health care, as well as cancer prevention. Health Watch with Dr. Marianne Ritchie, proudly sponsored by Jefferson Health.
And welcome back, everyone, on a Sunday morning. This is Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne, who is all over social media. You'll find her on Twitter, you'll find her on Facebook, and you'll find her on Instagram at Your Radio Doctor. Doc?
Thank you, and thank you to our listeners. I'm Dr. Marianne Ritchie. And now we welcome, by phone, Dr. David Chapon. We talked about Dr. David Chapon as all about rehab before and after events. And as with every topic, we want to share tips for prevention before a disease takes over, and in the case of prevention, would help preventing a second episode. Dr. David Chapon has worked in a three-prong approach. He provides cardiac rehabilitation after a heart attack or surgery, either bypass or valve surgery. He also has a prehab program that assesses people at low, medium, high risk to prevent their first MI or heart attack or surgery. And then finally, he's very involved with sports cardiology for the Sixers, the Phillies. We hope soon with the Eagles. They could use our advice. And along with college teams, including my St. Joe Hawks, and a special program for screening young athletes in the community that he does with Dr. Ho, and evaluating athletes for warning signs that increase their risk for sudden death. So welcome, my tongue's caught in my eye tooth. I can't see what I'm saying. Dr. Dave Chapon, let's start by describing the team effort that you offer with cardiac rehab after a heart attack or surgery.
Yes, thank you so much for having me on the show. And, you know, so cardiac rehab is a multidisciplinary approach to risk reduction after the event occurs, such as a heart attack or having a heart surgery. And multiple people are involved in the program, from nursing staff to nutritionists, doctors, exercise specialists, and smoking cessation. The goal really is to, you know, to reduce risk by mindset, healthy, improving the mindset of the patient, nutritional prudence, and really a monitored exercise program.
And I think that's the key word, Dave. I'm not the cardiologist, but monitor. I'm sure people, after they have a heart attack or they have heart surgery, they're nervous. They're afraid to get back out exercising. And if you monitor and see what they can tolerate and build on that as they get stronger, they're going to leave with a better attitude, and they're more likely to adhere to medications because your team explains meds and the side effects and what they're good for.
Correct. And you know, what I find is that after the heart attack or after an event, most people are afraid to go out there and just exercise.
Sure.
You know, they're worried, you know, is there going to be an event or how much should I be exercising? And so having the monitor there and watching that as one's exercising is very important during the cardiac rehab. And, you know, and the other thing is really the understanding of what a heart attack is and the pathophysiology of that. So we go through that and really go through the educational process of what you had and what you can do to reduce your risk of ever having it again.
Sure. And in the old days, people would go into the hospital with a heart attack or gallbladder surgery. Now we get people up and moving and the stays are shorter. So we have to remember, if a person does have a heart attack or surgery, that we enroll them immediately while they're in the hospital. We say, here's the patient who's going to be leaving soon, and we get them started in the hospital, because you're going to tell us about early enrollment and how that helps.
Yeah. So, the earlier the enrollment, the better. The earlier the awareness of this type of a program, the better. So in the hospital would be ideal. And also the awareness of the person going into the hospital that this actually is offered. And so if we aren't enrolling in the hospital and the person may, you know, enter into their doctor's or cardiologist's office afterwards, they can even ask or even seek out, you know, that there are cardiac rehabs in the region, that you can call a part of Jefferson Health.
Yes. So really the goals of your program are transformative. They have a whole team of cheerleaders helping them explain diet tips and their medications and cheering them on to stop smoking. I'm sure smoking is probably right up there as the number one cause for recurrent heart disease.
Oh, absolutely. Smoking would be, the number one etiology for increasing a risk for having an event, along with, the other risk factors such as diabetes, high cholesterol, high blood pressure, family history of heart disease, obesity, and even stress. And so the program focuses on healthy mindset, healthy diet, and the appropriate exercise program, along with, again, medication awareness and compliance and smoking cessation.
And it seems so obvious, but if your team can help a person stay on schedule with their meds, their exercise and diet, help them quit smoking, you're going to help them to prevent another MI. And studies show that the long-term outcomes are much better when a person starts before they leave the hospital, they stay on cue. And also, I guess there's an emotional component. I know I'd be terrified if I have a heart attack. And I read that up to 20% of the patients have depression or anxiety or even denial, which can lead to problems with family and marriage and work. And then you're offering that support that keeps them on track.
Absolutely. A healthy mindset is absolutely the key. And going through the stages of, the mindset and how that relates to healthy mindset relates to the potential future events. And so if we can encourage that and teach coping mechanisms along with the appropriate, again, nutrition, exercise program, and then compliance with medications, that's the key. And what we know is the more sessions that someone goes through in cardiac rehab, the healthier they are, the reduced events they would have, and
sure,
even the longer the survival.
Yeah, live longer. So let's jump to your prehab program. We'll spend a little time on that, and then I want to spend the majority of time on sports cardiology. So with prehab, tell us about that, Dave.
Yeah, so prehab is risk assessing someone before the heart attack or the stroke may occur. Prehab is a person comes into the office or wherever we're seeing our patients, and what we want to do is we want to risk assess that person via history, appropriate lab work, and or appropriate targeted imaging, and get your exact risk of. What is that risk of having a heart attack or an event going forward? And so we would stratify someone into the low, to the moderate, and high risk for that, and then help to design a lifestyle modification program that would reduce your risk of ever having a heart attack or stroke going forward, incorporating the same principles of mindset, diet, exercise, whatever supplements
sure.
or medications we may need to give.
It sounds like a gift certificate we should give to people. Go see Dr. Chapon and get head to toe. Because I think people forget how important, say, family history. If you have members, and they don't necessarily have to be your mom or dad or even a brother or sister, but if there's a pattern in your family of relatives getting heart attacks or needing heart surgery below the age of 60, that's certainly a red flag, along with your own possible diabetes, hypertension. Am I right about that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you can have people that are at assuming low risk by risk factors, but they have a very strong family history of heart disease. That's an absolute trigger for someone who may be at imminent risk for an event. So absolutely, that is the key.
Now let's hear about sports cardiology, Dave, because that's so important, especially for people who decide, okay, New Year's resolution, I'm going to start exercising. We don't want people to keel over weekend warrior style. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so what we do know is that exercise is is the key, you know, to health and wellness. You need not only just exercise, though, you need a healthy mindset, again, diet and exercise. And the more steps you take in a day, the better off you're going to be. But when you exercise or before you're going to go into a program, it's absolutely essential to know your risk of sudden cardiac arrest going into that. And so really, you know, understanding, you know, what are the warning signs for a potential event during sport. And such warning signs would be, you know, one would be shortness of breath or having chest tightness, a racing heart, feeling faint or fainting. You know, if someone has that, those could be warning signs for potential lethal episode on the playing field. But I don't want people to be scared of exercising. I think the key is exercise is good, but you need to know your risk going into that. And not just the weekend warrior or the person who wants to just go out and exercise, you know, in the community, but also we're talking about, you know, elite athletes. Understanding the warning signs for sudden cardiac arrest is essential so they can seek advice or appropriate screening if they should have that. But I would recommend that every athlete, competitive athlete, has some form of screening, whether or not that's just a basic history and physical, and or add the appropriate studies such as an electrocardiogram or an EKG and or ultrasound of the heart. So through such a risk stratification or such a risk assessment, we can then say, again, are you at risk or aren't you? And then really give you a peace of mind to go exercise, you know, with knowing, you know, what you should and should not do. And the other thing we can also mention are monitors, right? So nowadays we have wearable technology that you can wear, and we can help to guide what is the appropriate monitor or wearable technology you may want to be, you know, wearing, you know, while you're in sport.
Sure, and correlate symptoms with the rhythm. And it's also important to know that, you know, we talk about these young athletes in high school or college, and they're all jazzed up, and it's August, and it's hot, and you can push a little bit harder. Just drink more water. So when they get a racing heart or something, maybe they tell themselves, they don't need a coach or another player to say, just get back in there and do it. We could be missing, you know, every year in the news we hear about a young athlete who has sudden death, and that is, it's a beautiful thing that you're trying to do and make people more aware. And even the professional athletes who push themselves through pain and injury to get back out there and win the game. When we come back, we're going to ask Dr. Chapin to tell us a little bit more about his very special community project for athletes and screening that he does with Dr. Ho.
Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie is proudly provided by Independence Blue Cross. Dr. Marianne will return, but first, a medical message from one of our partners.
Tune in Sunday morning at 10 for Your Radio Doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie. Your health determines your life, your longevity, and your happiness. Let Your Radio Doctor lead the way. Sunday mornings at 10.
And one more segment to go on Your Radio Doctor here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. Dr. Reggie Ho in studio with us, joining us for the full hour. Joining us by phone, Dr. Chapin. Doc, all yours.
And thank you very much, Joe. I'm Dr. Marianne Ritchie talking to Dr. David Chapin. Dave, please tell us a little bit more about the community work that you do with Dr. Ho. It's a beautiful thing that you help screen young athletes who may be at risk.
Yeah, so there are two programs that I want to focus on. One is called Simon's Heart. Simon's Heart's mission is, sudden cardiac arrest prevention in the youth through awareness in the community, through helping pass valuable laws, and then also putting together standardized screening programs free for the community. This was based on a tragedy of a son who died at 6 months of age named Simon. And so that's one organization which, we've really brought together doctors in the community to really, you know, reach youth and hopefully stamp out sudden cardiac arrest. And all of the doctors a part of those programs are aware of, you know, how to appropriately screen these children. The other organization that we're a part of is called the Athlete Health Organization of Thomas Jefferson University. And this is a little bit different approach. This is a free pre-participation physical that we offer to the city of Philadelphia. We do this usually at one major venue a year and then do pop-ups through the year. And it's a multidisciplinary pre-participation physical from primary care to pulmonary to head trauma and then to a heart station, which is actually led by Simon's Heart, the heart station. And we bring people together, physicians and nurses, the whole healthcare team, to really help to screen the community there, looking for really chronic issues in these children, such as asthma, head trauma, and then also obviously, trying to stamp out sudden cardiac arrest in these youth athletes.
That is fantastic because people are just not aware of the fragile nature of young people going out and really pushing themselves sometimes too hard. I'm going to ask Dr. Reggie Ho to share a story about one of his young patients.
Sure. We had a young girl who was having passing out episodes and was diagnosed with epilepsy. As she was in a store about to get an MRI for further evaluation, she collapsed and had a cardiac arrest. And fortunately, there were bystander policemen who were there getting coffee, and they performed CPR and applied an AED to her, and she had what we call ventricular fibrillation, and they were able to successfully resuscitate her. And it turns out that she had a heart condition for which she was successfully revived and did well and got a defibrillator. And so these cardiac arrests can occur in young people. They can occur in professional athletes. As we know, Jay Baumeister just last week is a professional hockey player who had a collapse and required CPR and is undergoing testing right now. So these are things that we have to prevent from happening.
Doc, let me ask you about your reference to the event in the National Hockey League. How serious was it when he was on the bench, completely out on the bench?
Oh, very serious. He is grave. He easily could have died. And so fortunately there was CPR and quick AED application, and he was able to be resuscitated without any problems, and now he's undergoing testing and will likely get a defibrillator.
And so this is why it's so important we teach our medical students. I speak in the community. I'm sure you folks do CPR. It's so important for as many people as possible to know CPR, aside from the obvious first responders like police and fire.
I had one question for Dr. Chapin before he leaves the broadcast. Doc, I wanted to ask you about from the time an individual goes through the rehab, fast forward 6 months or 8 months forward, are they still in the mindset of the rehab they learned, or do they struggle with that?
Yeah, so it's that's part of the key there. You know, there's always a struggle down the line. As people start to get back to their old lives, but the key is that in this type of a program, it's a multidisciplinary approach. We encourage them not only to do the acute rehab, which is 18 to 36 sessions, but then stay involved in a maintenance program. And then now we're also offering digital ways to connect to the patient. So it's really maintaining that connectivity and then also really enhancing, their understanding of what they had and what they need to do. That understanding is critical so that they will then maintain compliance with this down the line. But no, that is an issue in many programs, but that's part of the beauty of multidisciplinary approach and the appropriate education for these for everyone. It's a team approach.
Dr. David Chapin, thank you so much for joining us. That is a beautiful concept. And we're going back to mentioning that CPR is so vitally important, and it's important for lay people to learn as well. Teachers in daycare centers and all kinds of situations where we don't necessarily think it's going to happen. I'd like to thank our special guests, Dr. Reggie Ho and Dr. David Chapin, exceptional cardiologists at Jefferson. If you do want to take a CPR course, I know that Jefferson, called Jeff Stat, the EMT teachers that offer CPR classes to medical care providers, and Jeff Nursing Education offers CPR classes for lay people. And I know that there are centers near you if you look online to see where CPR is taught.
Can I have one question for Dr. Reggie Ho? Doc, I want to take you back to the earlier segment when you had referenced pacemaker. Because I was trying to understand a dear, close friend of mine, a media personality in town, found himself leaving the golf course, found himself going to the hospital, and then ultimately found himself getting a pacemaker. And then I wasn't quite sure why that was the choice for him. I think I know now from listening to you, but I wanted to get you to elaborate on it.
Yes. So he probably had, you know, very slow heart rhythm. So, you know, as we get older, the electrical impulses kind of slow down, and the cables that we were born with kind of rust out. So the heart rate slows down. And when it slows down so far, so much where it causes symptoms, then that's where we put in a pacemaker, which is kind of like an electrical bypass. So it overtakes the patient's slow heart rhythm, and it allows them to have a faster heart rate and let them function normally again.
Beautiful. I think this has been a great discussion, and I always love when Joe brings his thinking to the table because he might think of questions that we wouldn't. Tune in next week when we shift gears. March is Colon Cancer Awareness Month. Learn about prevention, early detection, screening, even a vaccine. Our first guest is professor and gastroenterologist, Dr. David Kastenberg, and part of his mission is to make the bowel prep much kinder. Join the Blue Lights campaign. Help us spread the message that colon cancer is very common, often deadly, but preventable. During March, turn your porch light blue. Put a strand of blue lights on the front of your home or business. Visit the website, bluelightscampaign.com. Send a photo of your home or business, or take a picture of you and your family, friends, coworkers, dressed in blue, for our website page called You in Blue, and send it to info@bluelightscampaign.com. We're ending American Heart Month with a message to my listeners. I heart you. And remember, your health is your wealth. And now sit back and enjoy the beautiful sounds of Frank Sinatra and the also calming voice of Sid Mark.
And that's going to do it for this week's edition of Your Radio Doctor here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. Special thanks to Dr. David Chapon for joining us by phone with some really good information. Don't forget you can go back and re-listen to the broadcast on radio.com. And Dr. Reggie Ho, who opened up our broadcast with the fight song from Notre Dame and brought our listening audience into some detailed information. Well done by you as well. That's going to do it. Don't forget doctor@yourradiodoctor.com. If you'd like to send Dr. Marianne an email, she is open, willing, and able to receive your information on all social media. See you next Sunday, everybody.
Thanks for listening to Your Radio Doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie, a Jacob Media production. If you're interested in learning more about the power of the radio hour, contact Joe Krause at 267-261-3428. This program is a paid commercial announcement and in no way represents the views of WPHT or its management.